I think there are some teachers that come into our lives that are gifts. We know it because we are so inspired and we are better because of being in their presence. And things they may teach us forever change the way we look at art or other people or just ourselves. And then there are teachers that can cause damage, that have a lot of concepts or judgments. And if we are given that at a young age, really any age, it's really painful. And it says, well, I might not be good enough to go into the arts because my teacher gave me a C and told me I didn't know how to draw. You know, just even like little small comments that they didn't mean about it. But because you're so impressionable and creativity is a really precious thing within oneself. So there's unlearning that has to take place with that because it can get ingrained and you can discover as an adult that you really do have something to say and is valuable and is worth being seen. And it is enough.
Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations with the artists and makers who use creativity to innovate, disrupt, and elevate. Alina Hennessy is an intuitive painter, teacher, writer, and workshop leader. She's been doing the art thing for 12 years and making enough money to keep doing art for the last 4 years. She is the author of 3 books, Cultivating Your Creative Life, The Painting Workbook, and Intuitive Painting Workshop. Her work has been featured in several magazines and publications, including Dwell, The Washington Post, Spirituality and Health, Red Book, and Natural Health Magazine, as well as being featured on Good Morning America. Her art is in galleries throughout the United States and in private collections around the world. Alina's learned a lot on this path. She's learned about what it takes to build a successful art business, how to trust in herself and her creative voice, what to do when the pain is big and where to turn to make it smaller, and how to make art that only you can make. Some things we talk about are the intuitive painting process or painting without a plan, dealing with the ebbs and flows of creativity, what to share, how much, and when, and how to make enough money to make it all work. May you enjoy this conversation, and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Welcome, Alina, to the Creativity Habit Podcast.
Hi, welcome. So happy to be here.
The way I start is with your creativity story as a little girl. Talk to me about how creativity showed up for you when you were little.
Oh, I love this question. Thank you. Well, it showed up very young. I believe I was drawing for hours before I could even really fully write. And my grandmother was a geography public school teacher. So she would come home. My parents and I lived in the same town as my grandma, and she'd come home with all these dittos, and she'd give the huge stack to me. I was a very introverted, shy girl, and I was highly imaginative and creative. My mom is an artist too, so it was definitely in the DNA. But I would flip over the dittos and just spend hours drawing all these imaginary worlds, just like ants and horses and girl, fancy ladies, and it was like I created my own world that way. And I did that for many years. And even I remember in first grade, everyone wanted me to draw them a horse. So I had to draw every first grader a horse and give it to them.
One of the things about your art is it's intuitive art. And we're going to get into that. And the way you started, which is how most children start, is very intuitively. You turned over these pieces of paper and you just drew. Were there things that you had to let go of as you went into adulthood to come back to that intuitive type of art, or did that stay with you throughout your childhood and into adulthood?
Another beautiful question. Thank you. Yes and no. Because I did art for so long, I did drop it in high school for a while and I got into theater, but because it was just so much a part of who I was, there was a part of acceptance that I had for myself and a kind of innate knowing that by looking at so many other artists' work throughout history, that there's so much different meaning, there's so much different aesthetic and ways of expression, which were even accepted in, let's say, the, you know, museum world, the high art world. And so I had this sense of like, you get to do what feels good to you and that's okay. But that was also been partly not true, because there's very much a process of creativity where it's like a doubt process and you're not sure. And as I was developing my voice over the last, I don't know, 15 years as an adult, like doing this full time, even before then, so starting, let's say, out of college, like in my early 20s, yeah, there was insecurity there, and there was a sense of, could I be better, or like comparing yourself, or going through that phase of the creative process where it is like, oh, this doesn't look good, and that's like anything in life. Like, I believe painting is such a metaphor for life, so a process of doubt within the painting. But I've noticed in the last 5 years that voice has really quieted, and I'm really able to trust it completely intuitively. That stuck place doesn't really occur as much. And all I can say is that simply comes from doing the work. Ira Glass talks about that. Chuck Close, so many amazing creatives talk about that. That it just comes from trusting your own process and understanding yourself.
One piece about that is when you say it just comes from doing the work, I think that's very helpful. And I would love for you to say a little more about that, because so often we're looking to, quote unquote, find our creative voice right from the get-go. We want to understand what it is, and we wonder why we don't, if we don't know what it is. So tell me a little bit more about that process for you of the consistent work practice that led to, over time, this trust of your own voice and of who you are.
Right. Well, I've noticed there's a lot of young artists that start out, and again, I relate to this. It doesn't matter what age they are. It just matters, like, they're just starting their creative journey. Like, they're taking it more seriously. They want to devote more time to making art. And they have a certain aesthetic that they really like or that they want to achieve, and they're not able to achieve that, and that's frustrating. That's challenging for them. But really takes patience, right? It really takes this sense of patience and trust, even when you know you're not liking exactly what you're creating. You know, like, you're almost there or you're halfway there, you can feel that. But by doing the work, we get there slowly each time, we learn each time. We can't really expect just to conceptually get a download about like how we're going to create, it's going to be perfect. It comes, especially through an intuitive process of creativity, it comes through just learning and doing it through the process, and then you get more confidence and you get more response to your work and you get more refined with your voice. I think it's very related very much to life. Like, you trust yourself more in life, you get better at your relationships, you get better at hopefully taking care of yourself, because through time there is wisdom, there is unlearning and there is learning, there's the dance of both. So painting is no different than that. And it really is a process of maturity. I look at my work 5 or 6 years ago and I'm like, oh, like, there was parts of it that I can see were undeveloped. That's right where I was back then. And so now, because it's sort of like a brimming over, because it's been so much time in the studio for me, I really trust now. But, you know, I just say to other people, just be patient with yourself. And keep showing up in your studio, keep exploring, because you learn through your own process and you'll get better at each time, because you'll learn what works and what you didn't really connect with, and how to just deepen your work that so that it reflects really what you want to share, what you want to express.
I love that. And I love the comparison to life, like with self-care as an example. I feel like that's such a perfect example. There's so many things we can't know about what's best for us or how our body works, or things that, like, the best foods, until we just do it over time. And of course our body changes just in the same way that the painting is going to change as you evolve, but we can't hurry that process. So I love the way that you explain that and the metaphor for that. One of the things, just in speaking specifically about intuitive painting, was in an interview, someone asked you to describe your artistic approach, and you said, "I like to work through intuition. I am inspired by the elements of art, color line combinations, simplicity, animals, movements. I have a free spirit, but really, I like to ground things in reality and manifest them in ways that feel true, doable, and intuitive to me." So what is it in particular about your process that's so intuitive? Like, talk to me a little more. Tell me about what intuitive painting means to you and how that shows up in your own painting.
Well, I like to balance it a little bit by giving it some structure with the elements and principles, but the way that it's really intuitive is I will often start without a plan. And I really like that for the background and the first several layers, because I like to see the happy accidents and what comes from just exploration and experimentation. Water is a really important element. Water is so free flowing. So I use a lot of water in my backgrounds. And I like, especially with the acrylic inks, I like to just see how they kind of take off, and they do their own thing sometimes. So that's something I'm not trying to control. Sometimes through that, something really unexpected and beautiful happens. And then basically from that, I build upon it what colors, with the elements, what shapes, what any texture, any form that wants to come through from that process. What it means to me, and I believe Julie Cameron's talk about this in The Artist's Way, is like getting out of my own way. Like not trying to control the process and seeing what the process wants to reveal to me and not going in with a specific plan. However, and I realize from working with students that they don't always have this. And so this is something I try and help them with. I will sometimes have a vision before I create a painting with a certain subject matter, motif, botanical, animal, like I talked about. Thing that I'm feeling that's like in my energy field, so to speak, it's in my imagination. So that might come out later if it works, or it might change a little bit. And that's also how it's intuitive, is I'm not attached to that. Let's say I really want to paint like three owls. Well, maybe only one comes through, or maybe it's instead it's like a hawk. So yeah, that's part of it. That's a hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and it sounds to me that a big piece of intuitive painting is being really present, because you're showing up for whatever shows up as you paint. So are there things that you do before you begin painting, or even as you're painting, to help you get into and then stay in that very receptive, present place?
Yes. I think just my lifestyle and where we live really helps. I love having my studio on my land here. So we're kind of surrounded by woods. So it's quiet out here. That really helps me. I'm very sensitive and empathic being, so too much noise doesn't work for me. Being able to walk outside and go on a little hike is really helps me get in touch with that presence. And also like not forcing. I sometimes you need to just force it and just make it happen. But really, my creativity comes in waves. I believe in having a discipline about it, but I also believe in riding your waves. And sometimes I will be really creative, like with cooking or my body, like doing more yoga, or because that's what my intuition, again, is calling me. And also taking an input and like going on the walk to a park across the way and like just noticing. For me, it's so visually inspiring, and I believe all that really helps my painting.
Is understanding the waves of your creativity, has that also been something that has evolved over time? I'm wondering, for example, if there was a time in the beginning, at least, where you may have pushed through in an attempt to just keep creating, even if you weren't feeling it, or if you've always been able to just go with the ebbs and flows of creativity.
No, it's something I've learned. And I noticed like when I was starting out, I would force things a lot more. And now I don't overwork something if I'm too tired. Sometimes when I was unsure of my process, I would do that. When you're too tired, you need space away from it, or you're trying to push something to be what it's not. And then you get stuck and then you get more frustrated. So I've learned to walk away in those moments, take a hot bath, read, watch a movie.
Yeah.
Instead of forcing it.
Right. So the creativity as well as the actual thing that you're making, the whole thing is a very intuitive process.
Yeah. You know, like it's the same in life, Daphne, like when we force a conversation that we know we're not ready to have or anything like that, right? So painting is like a conversation with oneself, I find. And it's nice to be able to give something space if it's not that time to make it happen. Because I've found like if I overwork something, it's not in that harmony and that flow. And then the next morning, it feels so fresh. And I'm like, I can really have more presence with it and be more clear to be in touch with those creative instincts.
Yeah, I've also found that if I try to push something when I'm really not in the space, it can take me like five times longer to get it done than if I just wait for when that is the right moment. It's interesting. You mentioned a conversation that actually brings me to another thing I wanted to ask you about, because you had said art making serves as a channel for things we sometimes can't express in words. What have you found that you've been able to say to the world through your painting that you wouldn't necessarily express in words?
I'm loving your questions. They're really wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, that's a good question, because it's hard to go there with words, but I will. There's a certain feeling or energy that I'm intending to convey without trying, if that makes sense. It's just something that I want to convey inherently. And that's really honoring nature and a feeling that we can get within oneself and within one's five-dimensional or imaginary realm. Rumi talks about, do not be lonely, the universe is inside of you. It's very abstract for me, and it's also very much inspired by the actual elements themselves, but it's definitely a feeling of spaciousness and really sweet joy and honoring nature, I would say.
It's interesting that you mentioned the dimension, because I feel like with your paintings in particular, that they bring an added dimension to life. There's this dimension of, and you can tell me if this is an intention of yours or not, but when I look at your work, there's this added dimension of as you say, joy, I was going to say hope. Everything feels a little brighter, a little bit more alive. I can see how the words that you might say would not be enough to express that.
Yeah, and it's also something that maybe doesn't really convey very well into words, because I don't want it to make it profound or anything. That's not what I'm meaning, but it's just, it's a visual language. And so that's what I'm really interested in exploring through color, through line, through shape, what can come through. And I love that you say hope too. I feel that. It's also like a returning to one's childlike self, where there is that innocence that feels just so full of possibility.
You had mentioned that with the phases of creativity, you talked about this initial phase, which is being really excited, open, and that's childhood, which is fascinating because it sounds like that's a phase that you really like to incorporate in your art. And then there's this time when the possibilities are endless, which is youth. And then challenges, which is adolescence. Then it's a lot of coming back to this process of not just intuitive painting, but also who we are. You say we have to unlearn what we've been taught to get back to our truth, and that's adulthood. Mm. So how do we begin to unlearn what we've learned? And then how do we figure out, how do we discern what's worth keeping?
Well, I think there are some teachers that come into our lives that are gifts. We know it because we are so inspired, and we are better because of being in their presence. And things they may teach us forever change the way we look at art or other people or just ourselves. And then there are teachers that can cause damage, that have a lot of concepts or judgments. And if we are given that at a young age, really any age, it's really painful. And it says, well, I might not be good enough to go into the arts because my teacher gave me a C and told me I didn't know how to draw. You know, just even like little small comments that they didn't mean about it. But because you're so impressionable, and creativity is a really precious thing within oneself. So there's unlearning that has to take place with that, because it can get ingrained. And you can discover as an adult that you really do have something to say and is valuable and is worth being seen. And it is enough. And you get to trust yourself again. And so that's what I mean by unlearning, is like these concepts of what society or maybe well-intended adults or adults that were unconscious have told us that we aren't good enough. And that can be really hard to overcome. So that's a lot of unlearning. And then it's like, what is good art? At this point, there are no standard for that. That it's such a free expression. And it, to me, it's an energy that you feel, you know, when you look at someone's work. And then it's like the learning comes from showing up and understanding yourself and understanding your process and taking what really worked for you through certain teachers or through your own process or through trips to a museum and what you're really attracted to, and leaving what you know you're not attracted to. That's not for me. I'll never be, although I really admire classical realism, I have so much admiration for it, that's just not who I am. And that's okay. All that's okay.
What do you think is one of the biggest things that you had to unlearn for to get to where you're at with your art?
It's a great question. Well, okay, to kind of refer back to my example, I had a few college professors that were really great, and I had one, I think he was well-intended, but he told me I used too many colors in my colored pencil drawing of a lizard. It was like this iridescent lizard. There were so many colors in it. But I remember like having the critique and feeling ashamed. And, you know, that stuck with me. I felt like I didn't really fit in art school because I really was into Matisse and bright colors. And everyone was doing this more heavier conceptual stuff that I didn't really even understand what they were doing. And so I just kind of assumed like the art world wasn't for me because I wanted to just explore color relationships and do more abstract things. And that wasn't what was in trend. And so I left that and I went into education and art therapy and art education. And eventually I realized, no, I do have something worth being seen. I am enough to create and try this. So that was a big thing to unlearn, because I think sometimes in the MFA programs, I don't know if that's happening anymore, but back, you know, when I was thinking about applying, it couldn't be too pretty. And I like making things beautiful. So
that's so fascinating.
Right?
That wasn't part of your education, that it wasn't even supposed to be too pretty.
Right. Have you gone to art school? You know anyone?
No.
And people can relate to that. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know what that's like, although I do know that I have spoken now with a number of people who have gone to art school who talked about the type of person they felt they were supposed to be an artist, like the what they had to take on to attach that label to themselves. And so I do know that there's obviously a teaching that goes along with art school about who you're supposed to be, it sounds like, from people I've spoken with.
Yeah, it's sort of underlying, at least in the undergraduate. I remember getting rejected for something, and I definitely felt like because my art wasn't like everyone else, I just didn't feel like I fit in. I wasn't weird enough. Like, I don't know. It wasn't because I wasn't weird. I was weird in a different way, but just not through my painting. My painting, I wanted to celebrate beauty, and that wasn't cool, or I don't know. It's funny, like, I don't know if that's still happening or what the deal is, but that was the phase in the mid-90s for sure of my art school. There was a lot of black everywhere.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I just had a huge insight while you were sharing, so I really appreciate that.
Aww.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the business end of it, because you're quite successful, as far as I can tell from the outside, you're quite successful as an artist in the business realm of being an artist. And was business a piece that you took to naturally? Was that something that you set out to have? Was an art business? How did your work go from painting to encompassing business and being a business?
Well, I don't have a real glamorous answer for that, because I do think I have an inherent business sense. I don't know where it came from. I was always good in math. I know a lot of people don't have that from talking to them. So for me, I just sort of paid attention. But the evolving of really developing it as a business came from because I wasn't making enough money just showing in galleries. That's really a hard way to make a living. And I realized for me to really do this, to really provide an income, I needed to make it more of a business. And I got inspired by other creative people and crafters and so forth who I saw were taking their creativity, whether it was in a purely artistic or purely craft or manufactured way. Like, and I said, okay, well, how do I want to approach it? It was the same thing as a painting. It was like, how do I make my business my art, but I can also really provide for myself. And that was, again, a learning process of what didn't work and what works. And so I refined that over time. And now I'm in a really good place with all of that. You know, and I really feel like I broke through something 3 or 4 years ago with that. But I've been doing this full time for 12 years. So that again was being patient and a lot of experimentation.
And what did you break through?
Learning to really sustain myself in a way that felt really awesome financially. And like in a way that I wasn't worried about, was this going to be enough? Just to really relax into that and to be really grateful for what my art career has provided me. And it was just a way to sustain myself with certain books and my e-courses and licensing, that it just sort of broke through to this level where I was like, okay, this is really happening. This is awesome.
Over 12 years, what things have you learned that you feel have proven to be the most effective?
Knowing what you're good at, like what you're naturally gifted at, or people really respond. Having the different honeypots, I feel like selling your originals, teaching, doing licensing, selling prints, that sort of thing. Being diverse that way, and then knowing which ones, like, wow, like I get a really good response when I have a painting sale online, or when I did this gift fair in New York, like I got tons of orders, or people really love my teaching. And which one is really worth your time and effort? Because sometimes as artists, we spend a lot of time in something that, because we just want to, and we're so, it coming from such a pure place within us, such a motivated place, but it may not really financially provide. And so the goal is to have as much time in the studio as you can, right? With things that can really provide for you. So definitely e-courses have been huge for me, and teaching. And I didn't know I'd be a good teacher for this. I had no idea. I mean, I had experience with it, my background, but not for adults in this very intuitive, intentional way. And so when I got such a good response from my workshops, I was overjoyed. That was something that was unexpected. Wasn't planning on doing that.
Well, since you didn't know you were going to get such a good response, and you, as you said, Alina, that you weren't planning on doing workshops and teaching, how is it that you got started in workshops?
Well, I was invited to teach at like an art retreat that had a lot of different art teachers, like artists who had book deals, or, you know, they were well known in the blogging world. And I had taught like some community college. I definitely had taught kindergarten through 12th grade art many years, but I didn't know this style of teaching, because, you know, teaching painting in this very like intentional, heartfelt way, it's like, how do you approach that? So it's accessible to all these people who have different levels of experience. It can feel daunting. And so when I came up with a lesson plan for it, I really didn't know how the response was. So yeah, I got invited to teach at this retreat. And because that response went so well and people loved my class, then I got invited to teach on the West Coast at another art studio. And then the book came out, and it all sort of supported itself. And then I created my first online class, and it was just happening. And it was great. And I was very grateful for it.
Did you find, as this happened, as you went from painting to then doing workshops to doing online courses, that you also had to intuitively like come to different knowings about who you are, that you had to like make space for your personality to shift as you grew with your business?
Yes. So that's a beautiful question. When I started out as an artist, it wasn't about my personality at all. It wasn't about me teaching. It was just about the work, the paintings, the prints, the tiles we were making, the screen printed apparel. And I was just like the name behind, you know, the artist, the designer behind it, kind of hiding behind it. And then I went through a divorce, and that sort of shifted everything for me. And I wanted to put more of my voice and what I was learning and the healing arts into it, but I really didn't know how to do that, and that felt daunting. And so starting to teach and putting a part of my personality, reading Mary Oliver poems throughout class and having people write about their intentions and writing about things they want to let go of and writing about what gives them joy, and then how could you incorporate that into your painting? You know, that was all an unknown, was like, was this going to work? And it ended up working really beautifully. And it's evolved over the years, and I've refined it as I've matured as an artist. And it just kept evolving, and I kept putting more of myself into my work and into my offerings, and way more fulfilling this way.
Are there parts of yourself that you feel you've had to let go of in order to step into greater success as an artist?
Yes. I feel like my work used to be have a lot of pastels and lighter and colors. There was sort of a hiding that was happening for me in my work because it was soft. There was a mutedness that I thought was aesthetically really pleasing, but it's also safer. I've noticed as I step more into trust and power myself as just being creative, my work gets a lot bolder and more contrasted, and I'm not afraid to go into the darker areas, like darker colors, and really make things shine and like stand out. That took some practice. And being able to share and relate to others and share parts of myself that, you know, that I share in through social media that I may have never thought I would have shared. That takes time, like writing about my divorce. It took me a long time to write about that, but I wrote about it five or six years ago. But then getting so many letters from people. So yeah, definitely being seen and trusting being seen and the vulnerability that can come with that.
And it sounds to me like you did it very gracefully in stages. You would let yourself be seen a little bit and then a little bit more and then a little bit more. It wasn't this all or nothing thing. It was an evolution. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I get that question a lot. And I think that's important because I think when we really, again, force something, that's really vulnerable in a way that's not so good. Like we're expecting a response. It can be detrimental, you know, if you're not ready. Like if you've worked it all out already within yourself, then it's much less risky to do that. And then I find the response is often really supportive. So not using as like your social media platform for your own, I don't know, healing, but just for your, it's just like where you've already at and you've already come to a peaceful place with it. And trusting it step by step. When I first started sharing my work, I remember I felt really vulnerable because it was really scary. Now I don't have that as much, but I trust that process.
It is a process. It is a process of allowing oneself to be seen and figuring out exactly how we want to share who we are. And yeah, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said in August of this year, and it was really made me very curious, is you wrote, for me, something, a deep ancestral or karmic sorrow began whispering to me 4 years ago, and the last 2 years have been wowza. Earth school has a way of breaking you down, so you have no choice but to more deeply understand its paradoxical truths. From that, I wonder, so what have you learned in these last 2 years that have been wowza, and what are the truths that you've come to know?
Right. Well, that's a big conversation.
It's true. It's a big question. So come at it any way that makes sense to you.
No, it's great. Yeah, I think that if we do the work, if we show up for ourselves and our relationships, and we really take to our own internal exploration and just learning about oneself and one's healing process, our relationships and personal, romantic, familial friendships really can deepen and blossom. Having a real peaceful and happy life is possible, but you have to go through some ugly, painful places, at least, you know, I have and so many people I know, to get there. I think there are things that happen to us in life that, you know, really cause deep sorrow and loss. And so it's like, how do we grow from that? How do we show up and being patient with oneself and one's process, even when we're in the really uncomfortable places in our life that feel really icky and yucky and uncomfortable. But I've just learned that by really going deep within myself and trusting my therapist or whoever's in your life that's showing up for you to help, you really do grow and you really do blossom, and that joy is really possible. And it comes to me through simplicity, and it comes through understanding one's parents and or one's childhood and one's ancestry. And it was really hard, but it was really beautiful now to be on the other side of that. And I'm really grateful. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
I'm just about to go.
Yeah, I'm also curious, how does it come to you through simplicity?
Through really deep acceptance of the past and oneself, and making peace with the past and trusting life and trusting the journey. That sounds very simple, but that's definitely a part of it. And I think when we really show up to meet ourselves, life shows up to meet us through our relationships and through other things. But it's like that looks different for everybody.
How did your painting help you through that? Like, how has your painting helped you through the times when they were harder times?
Yeah, so there was a process that I went through a few years ago that I went through a breakup. It was really painful for me. And even though, like, I don't know, many of us, I feel like, have been in this situation. If you can love someone, but you know you need to end it, even though your heart maybe doesn't want to, but you're rational and even your intuitive self knows. That was really hard because, oh, I loved him dearly, but there was just things, just knew it was over. And so I did turn to painting. I turned to a lot of creativity and support through my network and my community. But one process with the painting, of letting the painting take that sadness and that grief, was really beautiful because I kind of look at it as like a spiral. And so if you go to the sort of bottom, the depths of your sadness, and you let the painting take it, the substrate take it, and then what happens is, at least with my process of feeling and of grieving, and then I watch myself slowly spiral up from that place to a place of resolution right where I was at through the painting. And it was beautiful. It was healing, and it served as a visual representation and a truth-telling for me in a very abstract way. And I remember when I shared it on social media, I didn't share the... That's another thing. I never shared really specifically about that breakup. It felt too early. But when I shared that painting, it said something like, "Carry me home." And it had a boat with flowers like overflowing from it. But the background had a lot of depth to it. And people responded like that they had an emotional response that made they cried when they saw it. And that's without them even knowing the story. So I do believe in the power of art to convey and help safely take those emotions and turn them into something in a way that it's so safe for you, and it's so affirming. You know, it's affirming for your own process of healing.
And that's an excellent example of what we referenced earlier when you said art making serves as a channel for the things we sometimes can't express in words. You took your experience and you put it on the canvas, and people resonated in whatever way they did, but they resonated.
Right. And they didn't need to know the story because they resonated in themselves, whatever was in their life, you know, just that energy that you can feel. And that's why I love it so mysterious about art. And I think that's why we're just drawn to it, because of that mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of freedom to let each person experience whatever it is that they're experiencing without having it be specifically explained to them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
One of the things you say about your work is that it's worship, that you have your work be in service to the grand design. How do you see your work as in service to how are you showing up in service with your art?
Well, that's like something when I spent time in India and I heard the phrase work as worship, the way that some people over there may look at it, like a service, a devotion, like everything is devotion to spirit or God. And that really resonated to me, that it's a gift to be alive, to have this experience in this human body, and to allow our souls to grow. So to honor that, to allow the creative process to honor what it means to be alive and to have the soul experience of learning and growing here for this very short time. That is another thing, that, to answer your question earlier, to expound upon that, is what I'm trying to do with my work, definitely.
It's beautiful. So speaking of your work, for people who want to check out your work, you can go to alinahennessy.com, and that's two N's and two S's, H-E-N-N-E-S-S-Y. And you also have some different courses and things that are available. Can you say a little bit about what you have going right now?
Sure. If you go to my online courses, my Year of Painting is an enrollment for next year. And that's my most popular course. People from all over the world join that one. we start with a new lesson for the new year, for our intending the new year to work with our word of the year. And it's very intuitive, and there's a lot of depth we explore through different materials and concepts of art. And I really enjoy it. You can see that on my website.
And that's for anybody. It's not for somebody who may have painting experience necessarily, or consider themselves an artist, correct? It's anyone who just wants to.
Yeah, it's all levels have joined, and the beginners love it, and people who are more advanced take it and make their own and expound upon their knowledge or build upon their knowledge. Okay. All levels are welcome.
Great. So before we finish here, I have one last question, and before that, a gratitude and appreciation for you. I appreciate that I realize now that you've incorporated more of the dark in, as happens with adulthood, with maturity. And I really appreciate the stand that you take for the light, that you are bold enough to be the joy, to be the hope, to be the light. Often we tend to almost chide people for being that way, or consider them Pollyannish or naive. And I feel like more than ever, we need that. So I think it's actually a true act of courage to be that and then to share that with the world. So thank you for showing up that way.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I really appreciate you sharing that with me. It means a lot. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our time together.
Yeah, I have too. So the last question I have for you is, why do you think it's important that each person who feels called to makes their thing?
There are so many reasons. I believe art can change, not only save lives, and I know it does save lives, but it also transforms lives in a lot of ways you don't expect. It's time just for yourself, and you'll discover more about yourself and leave room for that element of surprise to see what wants to come through.
Great. Thank you so much, Alina.
Thank you so much, Daphne. I really appreciate it.
I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast. Head on over to thecreativityhabit.com to read this week's profile, The Rituals, Routines, and Day in the Life of Energy Healer Stacey Vita. To read about the daily routines and practices of other artists and makers, go to thecreativityhabit.com. You can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to iTunes Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And then join me next week for another Creativity Habit podcast. Thank you for listening.